So we're excited for them. We'll be praying for them, that God would use them in a great way over there preaching. Anyone else? All right. Let's set that to the side. I want to get right into our lesson for tonight as we continue looking at this idea, is there a God? And we spoke about it last week, and I want to continue with it a little bit this week as well. Last week, just by way of review, we had given four arguments for the existence of God. Now, remember, we said you cannot prove there is a God. Scientifically, historically, you cannot prove there is a God. But we looked at arguments last week that would hopefully lead a person to believe that there is a God. One of those arguments was what we had called the cosmological argument. And that argument begins with the idea that everything has to have an adequate explanation. The universe could not have come from nothing. Do you remember how I illustrated that? If you walked in the room tonight and saw an elephant standing here in the front row, you would want an explanation, right? And you would say, Pastor, what's up with the elephant? And I would say, I don't know, it just appeared. Would you settle for that? Probably not, because elephants make big messes on the carpet, okay? That would be one issue right there. But you would reasonably want an explanation for how this got there, all right? The second argument was the teleological argument. That has to do with purpose or design. All the intricate design of the universe, think about it, the intricacy that we don't even comprehend ourselves, we're not even that smart to comprehend all of it, it all argues for a purposeful first cause. Not that it just happened. And I'm going to be doing some things tonight here to hopefully help demonstrate some of those things. The anthropic principle, which argues or states the earth has just the right conditions for human life. And we went through all of those last year as far as the tilt of the earth, the distance from the sun, all of those different factors that make this earth, this planet, perfect for human life. And then there was the moral argument. That one, I think, is very hard to get away from. It states that because we all have a sense of right and wrong built into us, there has to be a supreme lawgiver where morality comes from, all right? And do you remember the number one objection to the existence of God? Anyone want to try to spit that back out? The number one objection to the existence of God. Someone's checking their notes right now, all right? The number one objection, if there is a good and omnipotent God, then why is there evil and suffering in the world? We can relate to that, can't we? Because we've all suffered evil and suffering. The existence of evil must prove there is not a good, omnipotent God, or so they would say. There is evil in the world because the first humans God made abused their freedom and chose to disobey God, bringing the consequences of their sinful disobedience upon them. That is why there's evil in the world. And you remember Romans chapter 5 and verse 12, wherefore is by one man sin entered into the world and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men for that what? All have sinned. So in the beginning, someone sinned and they brought consequences. But this verse tells us all have sinned. So we all are bringing consequences. Now that doesn't mean, and I pointed this out last week, but for anyone that might be here tonight first time or listening live stream first time, that doesn't mean that if you have suffering in your life right now or you have a car accident or you get an illness, it must be because of sin in your life. No, car accidents, death, illnesses, bad things, they happen because sin is in the world, and those are consequences of sin being in the world. Romans chapter 5 and verse 18, therefore, as by the offense of one, judgment came upon all men to condemnation. Even so, by the righteousness of one, the free gift came upon all men unto justification of life. Why did God make man with a free will? Does anyone want to try to answer that? Why did he give us the choice? So we would choose to love him. Absolutely. He loved us, and he wanted us to choose to love him in return, not forced. So why does there have to be so much suffering in the world? Well, it is the result of man's sin. Romans 6:23 is a good reference to write down for that. And then another question we considered, why doesn't God do something about all the evil and suffering in the world? How would you answer? He did. That's right. He sent his son to die on the cross because of all the evil and the suffering in the world. C.S. Lewis once said this. He said, folks, this is so true, so true. How many of you, before I tell you what C.S. Lewis said, how many of you, when you want to get someone's attention and they're not listening, what do? You whisper? Who said whisper? Okay, but if they can't hear you, well, then you got to get a little louder, don't you? And if your child is about to run out in the street, you are not going to whisper. Okay? Stop! Attention now! Okay? There's different ways that we can get people's attention, isn't there? C.S. Lewis said this, God whispers to us in our pleasure. He speaks to us in our conscience. But he shouts to us in our pain. Different ways that God is trying to communicate with us. And many times we ignore the whispering and the pleasure because we're so focused on the good times. And we try to rationalize and justify those feelings we're having in our conscience. So sometimes God has to shout to us in our pain. Most people think suffering is bad. Is suffering bad? No. It's just hard, right? So let's look at another aspect that argues for the existence of God, and that would be this matter of creation, an introduction to creation apologetics, okay? We're going to transition into creation apologetics here. It is the argument that helps prove our existence as a creative act of God versus being evolved from absolutely nothing. And I understand there is much information about this out there, isn't there? With Ken Ham and the Creation Institute, all of the information that they put out there. Certainly, easily, we could spend months just studying this one issue. And no doubt some of you would really enjoy that too, because that's your thing. You like that. But we're not going to do that, okay? And here's my take on that. Oatmeal is good, but you have it 3 times a day for 3 years, you're going to get sick of it, okay? Not that it's bad, it's good, but there's a whole lot of the Bible we need to look at. So we're just going to kind of touch on a couple of things here tonight, and then we're going to move on. See, my purpose is to give you enough knowledge to just give an answer. Not to be able to successfully debate Bill Nye the Science Guy. Okay, but to just give an answer for the guy on the street or the woman in the store or whoever you're talking with. Evolutionists have written extensively on their theory that we came from a series of natural causes and processes. They claim that evolution is a true science and that creation is not scientific. Would you agree with that? Okay, because the origins of life are a study in the past. I'm going to draw on your memory from last week. Because it's a study in the past, that automatically makes it a historical fact, right? Or a historical event, because it was in the past. Do you remember talking about that last week? No one was there to observe it. No one was there to write about it. No one ever saw creation or evolution. We have evidence of the past, And we can look for clues from science to support our position, our theory, or our idea, whatever you want to call it. But because it is a historical issue, neither creation nor evolution can be proven scientifically. We can only use science as evidence to support our case. It's kind of like looking at fingerprints at a crime scene. It doesn't necessarily 100% prove anything, but it can support and bolster your theory of what took place. Here's the bottom line. The bottom line for creation versus evolution debate. Both creation and evolution must be taken by faith, because neither one can be proved scientifically. Even though it comes down to faith, we're going to use science to make a case for Creator, and we're going to use science to demonstrate that God committed the act of creation and not time and chance, which is what evolutionists would claim created the world. So let's just look at two areas that support the argument that we were created by a supernatural act of a sovereign, self-existent being. The two things we're going to look at, and I cringe throwing these words out at you, okay? The law of biogenesis and the laws of probability, all right? We're going to keep it simple because I'm simple, folks, all right? But first, let's look at the law of biogenesis. Biogenesis, it's the most basic law of science. It says this: life can only come from life. That is a law, okay? Not a theory, not a hypothesis. That is a law from science that says life can only come from life. Take, for example, if we had a box of rags. I think I've got a picture. There we go. A box of rags on a table. Could those rags, I mean, look at them. Could those rags ever spontaneously generate and become mice? Are you sure? In times past, people thought they could. Evolutionists believed that that very thing happened at least once. Something with no life spontaneously generated into life. Though they admit it has some problems, that belief, they believe life began that way. An evolutionist by the name of George Wald. He was a Harvard biochemist and a Nobel laureate, so he's a smart guy, okay? An evolutionist. He wrote this: one has only to contemplate the magnitude of this task to concede that the spontaneous generation of a living organism is impossible. Now stop right there. Just think about that. An evolutionist is saying it's impossible for life to spontaneously generate from something that has no life. That's what George Wald said. Now let me finish his quote. Right after that, he said, "Yet here we are, as a result, I believe, in spontaneous generation." Does that make sense? He just said, this is impossible. Yet, folks, look, here we are. So I believe it, even though it's impossible. I believe it. Evolution is not scientific when it comes to the law of biogenesis versus spontaneous generation, okay? They are accepting spontaneous generation on faith. They don't believe it happened. They can't prove that it happened. They just accept it as a fact. In fact, evolutionists' only answer for believing this impossible occurrence is to say this: that given enough time, it could happen. Even though it never has, and they can't repeat it, and there's no proof of it, given enough time, it could happen. Folks, even with eons of time, the laws of probabilities are against them. And that's the second area we're going to cover in support of creationism. Considering the amount of time, they said given enough time, it could happen. Eons of time wouldn't be enough time for that to happen. Let me prove that to you, okay? If an evolutionist were to say, well, this world is billions of years old, with all that time, it's possible that something could have happened. There could have been a spark or something, and life began. With enough time, that could happen. Okay, let's consider the second argument, the laws of probability. Now, time is the friend of every evolutionist. They need time in order to believe their theory. Anything can happen with enough time, they say. George Wald, who I quoted earlier, he said this, time is, in fact, the hero of the plot. The time with which we have to deal is of the order of 2 billion years, he said. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible. The possible then becomes probable, and the probable virtually certain with enough time. One only has to wait, he says. Time itself performs the miracles. Let me read that last part again. He said, time itself performs the miracles. For evolutionists, time becomes God. But time and chance still do not have the ability to create all the complexities of the universe. Let me give you some ways that you can help someone understand this. I have up here a deck of Uno cards, okay? Uno cards, folks, all right? And when you're done playing a hand of Uno, what do? You collect all the cards, and then because they're all in order by colors or numbers, and then you do what? You shuffle them, right? Probably the first time cards have ever been shuffled on this pulpit, folks. They're Uno cards, all right? And you shuffle them once, and if you only shuffle them once, the other players are going to say, oh, you're cheating. You got to mix those cards up more, right? So you shuffle them a second time, and then maybe a third time, and a fourth time. Why do you do it multiple times? Because you realize that the more you shuffle them, the more out of order they're getting, right? To get them out of order, to make them more random as you deal them, you're going to shuffle them. More shuffling doesn't make them more ordered, does it? Now, we're going to take this a step at a time here tonight, folks. That's my purpose for spending time, there's that word, shuffling, because it gets them more out of order. The cards won't get more orderly with time. Time doesn't create more order. In fact, it creates less order. Can chance with time produce a more ordered deck? Is it possible that they would become more orderly? What do you think? The answer is yes. Eventually, but very randomly, would this deck become more ordered? Well, I could start off with a deck where every color is alternating, so there's no color matching, there's no numbers matching, and then shuffle them one time, and there would be more order because there might be two reds together. Or two fives together. So it did get more ordered. It is possible, but how much time would you need to shuffle that deck back into complete order again? We're going to try to figure that out tonight, but not with that. That's where the laws of probabilities come in. That's where they can help us. Scientific laws, again, folks. There's not enough time in the universe for chance to produce the intricate design of our complex and ordered universe. Now, I say there's not enough time in the universe because evolutionists will say the universe is about 5 billion years old, okay? Write that number down somewhere on your notes because we're going to reference back to that here in a bit. So let's create some time and chance and probabilities here. Let's start with something easy. I have a coin here. Heads, tails. You've all have done that before, okay? If I flip this coin, what is the probability that it's going to come up heads? What percentage chance? 50, right? It's easy. There's just two sides. One out of two times, the probability is that it's going to come up heads. This is very basic here, okay? And so we would write that as 1 over 2. We're going to construct a mathematical equation here. There it is. 1 over 2. This is random, but over time, 50% of the time it'll be heads, 50% of the time it'll be tails. Now, let's consider two separate events. Let's make this a little bit more complex. Obviously, the universe is way more complex than a coin. So let's take a dice. There's six sides on this die, okay? And together, we take the coin and the die together. There's a 1 in 2 chance that we'll get heads with this. There's a 1 in 6 chance, because there's 6 sides to this, that we're going to get it to land on a 6 when we roll it. So what is the probability, if we flip the coin and roll the die, that we'll get heads and 6? Well, here's how we figured that. We take 1 over 2 times 1 over 6, which is the 1 in 6 chance for the die, and we come up with 1 over 12. That means 1 out of 12 chances, that's the probability that we're going to get a head and a 6 at the same time. It would take approximately, in other words, 12 rolls and 12 flips of the coin to get 6 and heads together. But that's still pretty basic, isn't it? Now, you saw how mathematically we figure probability. So let's consider something else. I have here some note cards. And on these note cards, there's 10 of them. I've numbered them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And let's put them all in here, mix them all up, okay? Now, we're just randomly going to reach in and pull a card out. What is the probability that we could randomly pull the cards out in numbered order? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Ooh, we might be here for a while trying that, right? So how would we figure that out? Well, the same way we did this equation. It would be 1. We'd have a 1 in 10 chance of pulling out the 1. A 1 in 10 chance of pulling out the 2, okay? So we'd line up that mathematical equation, 1 over 10 times 1 over 10 times 1 over 10. We do that 10 times. This is pretty simple, isn't it, folks? This is not complex at all. Most anyone can count to 10, but the answer would be, well, before I give you that, I got to figure out how to say it again. You would get the right order 1 in 10 billion chances. In order for us to have a chance of doing it even one time, we would have to do it 10 billion times before the law of probability would suggest that we would pull them out in numbered order. That's a lot, folks. Okay. That's still pretty basic, though. Let's make it a little more complex. Let's take the phrase, the theory of evolution. It's on the screen. There it is. Those actual letters, okay? The theory of evolution. Now, what is the expected probability of chance to spell the theory of evolution if we were randomly drawing letters out of a hat? There's 20 characters, and we would need 3 extra letters, if you will, blanks, for the 3 spaces. So we have a total of 23 characters. Now, we're going to figure out the probability of that the same way. 1 over 23 times 1 over 23, and we're going to multiply that out 23 times. Now, here's the thing, though. We're not going to do 1 over 23. There are 26 letters in the alphabet. So if we reach into a hat full of alphabet letters, there's a 1 in 26 chance we're going to pull out the letter T first. And then actually we're going to add a second or a 27th one. That's the space that we need. So the formula would be 27 to the 23rd power, basically. Therefore, the chance, which is what evolutionists believe in, chance, but we need time, chance would actually spell the theory of evolution correctly in 1 out of 8.300 quadrillion times. Let's put that another way so we can maybe wrap our heads around that. And all we're doing is spelling four words, folks, okay? All we're doing is spelling four words. If a computer, because we don't think as fast, if a computer was programmed to pick random letters at the rate of a billion per microsecond, well, how about how many a second? That would be 1 quadrillion picks every second. It would take that computer 25 billion years to spell that phrase correctly. Do you remember how old evolutionists say the universe is? 5 billion years. Folks, they haven't even had enough time, based on the law of probability, to spell the theory of evolution, much less have evolution where all of the intricacies of the universe are created by random chance. Give it enough time. Sir Fred Hoyle, the famous British mathematician, he said this: the probability of life arising by chance was 1 in 10 to the 4,000th power. So 1 over 10 times that, 4,000 times. He said this: that is like rolling 6 on a dice 5 million times in a row. That's the probability of life being created by chance, given enough time. Folks, there hasn't been enough time yet, has there? Based on their own numbers. These are some things that I hope can help you. Remember, not argue, but just to get them to see that maybe there's another way that would make better sense to put your faith in, instead of evolution, creation, and the God of creation. Amen? All right, so we're going to stop there for tonight. Break up into some smaller groups for prayer. You can pray with the person next to you. If you want to get up and move around and pray with someone else, that's fine. If you have no one to pray with, I'll be down here in the front.